Hello, and welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, Chief Investment Officer. Baskin Wealth Management is an independently owned investment management firm with over $2 billion in assets under management, providing customized wealth management solutions and services to families and foundations. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations that make sense about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. Welcome back to the podcast, and welcome back me from vacation. And Ernest, you did a great job last week hosting with the one and only David Baskin. I really enjoyed the episode, Lessons from David Baskin, talking about how he started Baskin Wealth Management many years ago and his investment career and I guess his experience with the ups and downs of the stock market. Pretty fascinating episode. Did you have a chance to re-listen to it?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that I began my investment career right after the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to look at, to hear a different perspective of the markets from somebody who's seen it through the various cycles over time.
Absolutely. I started my career right at the beginning of the dot-com bust with David. And I remember, Ernest, my honeymoon, October 2000, just started in the market, had no ownership at Baskin, just a young guy doing analysis. And I was looking and I saw the Dow was down 700 points. And I read that Nortel was down a huge amount. And I was like, oh my God, maybe I shouldn't come back from my honeymoon. I don't know if I'm going to have a job. But that's how things go in the markets. And here we are 24 plus years later. So check out that episode. And if you like it, please give us a 5-star rating. And of course, watch us on YouTube. So, Ernest, happy AI NVIDIA Day today. We don't own NVIDIA, but obviously we're fascinated by the strong rise in the markets this year, the strong insatiable orders and talk about AI. Hard to know what to make of it, of course. The demand for AI, of course, if you listen to the conference calls from Meta and Google and Amazon, they're all talking about spending a lot of money on cloud computing, on capital expenditures, on generative AI. Is this hype? Is it hyperbole? Is it fraud? Is it real?
One of the things that I think investors would do well to remember is that you don't need an opinion on everything that happens in the markets.
Well, you're a pretty opinionated guy.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And there's a great story from Warren Buffett, or when he was talking to Bill Gates, and Bill Gates was telling him about how the computer was going to change everything.
And he wasn't wrong.
And then So Warren Buffett looked at him and he asked him, so is it going to change how I chew gum?
Yeah.
And then Bill Gates said, well, it probably won't change that. And then so Warren Buffett looked at him and said, well, you can focus on your computers and I'll focus on gum.
Yeah.
And I think it's a terrific lesson in that in investing, all you have to do is focus on what you can understand.
Absolutely. And it is hard to know the future, of course. All we know right now, Ernest, is that lots of money is being spent by these companies. And it is amazing the profits that you're seeing from technology companies, the perfect balance sheets that they have. NVIDIA, which looked expensive a few days ago, of course, now reports such strong earnings that the stock could be cheap. It's hard to know. But like Ernest said, we're going to focus on what we know right now. And so we don't really have too many positive or negative opinions on NVIDIA. So we'll just leave it at that. So we want to talk, we have an awesome feature company that we want to talk about today, and it's one I don't think we've really spent a lot of time on the podcast. It was one of my top picks on BNN a few months ago, but we're going to do a deeper dive on it. But this is the Long-Term Investing Podcast, and we want to talk about what it means to focus on long-term compounding. So Ernest is going to talk about some couple case studies on two companies that our clients own and that just recently reported earnings. So let's get into it.
So there was a quote from Mark Bristow, who is the CEO of a large gold mining company.
Barrick Gold, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And he was basically complaining about how pension funds, so institutional investors that have a very long time horizon, don't have to worry about client redemptions.
Next to permanent capital.
He was complaining that these investors don't have the patience for long-term investing. And specifically what that means is they don't have the patience to develop a new copper or gold mine because mm-hmm. these are very expensive projects that take many years to develop without
maybe
any
even
payoffs.
A decade. Yeah. And you have to put up all this money up front, permitting, regulations, and who knows if it's going to work out.
And maybe if you look at the commodity industry, especially the gold and copper mining industry, maybe there's good reason why they're not willing to, people aren't willing to give these companies the benefit of the doubt.
Fair enough. But I guess what is common is not just about gold or copper companies.
Yes, but I think a lot of investors want to think of themselves as long-term investors. Mm-hmm. Like we call ourselves long-term investors.
Yeah.
But when it comes to actually owning the companies,
they're
not willing to take a long-term investing lens.
Yeah. And when the poop hits the fan, do you have the temperament, the patience to stick with that company and its management team? Because even the greatest businesses and the greatest management team run into trouble from time to time for whatever reason.
No, and not only that, it's sometimes it's just volatility, right? Like the stock, by definition, if you're owning a company for the long run, that means that the stock isn't necessarily going to work in the short run. Mm-hmm. It's because you believe in what the company is building towards for the long run. And so as a result, you shouldn't expect that the stock that you own is going to go up tomorrow, right? And so...
So clients and investors and all of us get frustrated when stocks don't do anything for a long time, or they see it on their statements and they bought it 2 years ago and they're still down on it. Everybody knows the price.
Yes.
But few know the fundamentals, the operations of the business.
Yeah. So there was a really good example in our portfolio of CoStar Group. We've featured CoStar Group on this podcast.
Yeah. We have a podcast called CoStar and something about compounding. So check it out.
And the stock has been under pressure over the last little while because they are making a very large investment into homes.com. To summarize it, they're basically trying to create a portal where if you're looking to buy a new home, there's a site where you can see listings, you can see the agent contact information.
Mm-hmm. If you watched the Super Bowl, you would have seen the ads. I think it's Eugene Levy's son who is on Schitt's Creek. We can say that on the podcast. And really a splashy couple of ads trying to create traffic to the website homes.com.
And the key is that this is a very expensive undertaking for CoStar. They're going to basically spend most of the profits that they generate in the business on this homes.com initiative.
Yes. I mean, if you're buying ads, a number of ads for the Super Bowl, that's not cheap.
And over the last year, every time they've announced an increase in investment into residential, the stock has fallen. Mm-hmm. The market doesn't like it. The market doesn't believe in what they're investing in. But I think the main point is that if you believe that that Andy Florance, the CEO, has a view towards the future and is building something impressive, then you have to live with it. And suffer through, well, maybe not suffer, but you have to live through the volatility in the near term.
If you can see the gold at the end of the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and especially if the management team has delivered on past successes. So it's not like CoStar is making this large investment without any experience in building new websites, new platforms. Talk about apartments.com that it spent a fortune on, which is now a gigantic success.
No, and there's good reason to think that CoStar will secede here mm-hmm. because they literally ran the exact same playbook before with apartments.com.
Yeah.
They splurged on marketing. The market didn't like like it at the time, but it ended up being a billion-dollar business.
And CoStar, of course, isn't betting the farm. It has an invincible balance sheet. I think $4 billion plus net in cash, and it's a business that generates high margins. It doesn't. It's not constrained by having to pay a high dividend. It doesn't pay a dividend. So there's more cash coming in every quarter, every day, to invest back into future growth.
Yeah, and that's I think that's what you want to see in the companies that you own, is that they're investing for the future, and they're doing so in a way that they can control their own destiny.
I mean, you and I talked about this. If we were running a business today and we said to each other, you know, Ernest, let's say we had $1 billion. If we can spend that $1 billion and have a good chance that that $1 billion spend will generate $1 billion of revenue every year for decades, you would do that. No brainer. You would do that. You would run, but the stock market, because it doesn't, because that cost lowers the company's guidance, means that the company won't beat some made up earnings expectations in the short term. The stock obviously gets clocked.
No, and I think that's become especially true in today's world, yeah, where sell-side analysts and investors, they like seeing smooth margin growth. Yeah. They like seeing earnings per share rising every single year, right? Mm-hmm, they don't like seeing lumpiness in these kinds of figures. And so I think this goes to something that you always say, is that companies eventually get the shareholders that they deserve.
Absolutely.
If over time, you're going to find the investors that believe in what you're trying to do. And if you execute on it, then these shareholders will be the ones who get rewarded.
Yes. So people buying CoStar are not going to be buying a company where they think that management's going to beat expectations every quarter and raise guidance, because that's not going to happen in the short term. But what we want as long-term investors is to own a business that can reinvest the cash flows that it has at high rates of return. And it's uncertain whether the homes.com investment will work. If it does work, the results could be amazing. Another example, Ernest, of a stock that hasn't done well in the short term, but the company's doing all the right things is?
CCL Industries. We've talked about CCL again on this podcast. And they are one of the world's largest providers of labels.
Yeah, almost $7 billion Canadian now of revenues of making labels. Who would have thought?
Stock has been flat for a long time. Mm-hmm. I think 7 years, 8 years.
Yeah.
And so and it certainly throughout this time, it hasn't been without lumps, right? One of their divisions that they acquired in 2018 has been much more volatile than they expected. But I think the company continues to deploy capital on acquisitions. It's paid down a lot of debt. And so if you believe in their strategy going forward, which we do, then there's no reason why you should sell simply because the stock's not moving.
That's right. And I checked Ernest's stock price today, the Thursday, February 22nd. CCL's up more today than NVIDIA. Of course, that hasn't had the fantastic rise that NVIDIA's had over the many years, but still, the company finally looks like organic growth is going to be recovering. The balance sheet, as you said, is clean. It's ready for acquisitions. The company just raised the dividend. You don't raise the dividend if you don't think the outlook is strong, especially when your balance sheet is in such great shape. The company is ready to go and hopefully regain that compounder status. I mean, a final example would be the same thing, Restaurant Brands, right? Where the company is refusing to focus on short-term targets because it wants to reinvest in the business to remodel the Burger King restaurants to get more traffic.
No, and Restaurant Brands is an interesting one because they are spending so much money on trying to fix the image of Burger King.
Yeah.
Like they're spending money on remodels, they're improving the technology, they're building these drive-throughs at the restaurants.
Non-stop ads during Raptor games, BK, have it your way, is driving me crazy, but those things work.
And these are all the things that you want to see companies that you own do. Mm-hmm. And so another one where I think this quarter was a pretty good quarter in the sense that I think it finally is finally seeming like the work that they're doing is showing fruit.
For restaurant brands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Traffic at Burger King is growing again. They like Tim Hortons, they're seeing good traction with their food sales and their cold drinks. Mm-hmm. And they're going to continue to open more stores.
Yeah. So this is the type of businesses we look for. And I get it. If you have some stocks in your portfolio, haven't done anything in a while, or you're frustrated that you don't own NVIDIA and you see a restaurant brands is doing nothing today, short-term versus long-term, right? Some companies are making the investments today. So as Ernest said, that can bear fruit in the future. So Ernest, the best type of businesses that Warren Buffett says are the businesses that can reinvest their cash flows at high rates. And even better than that, Ernest, is a company that generates organic revenue growth, right? And so if you put those two things together, that's how you compound money.
Yes.
So a great example of a company that has compounded people's capital over the years is Constellation Software. But today we're not going to talk about Constellation Software. We're going to talk about its spinoff, Topicus. So Ernest, Constellation spun off Topicus. It is the European version of Constellation Software, looking to acquire vertical market software companies across Europe. It was spun off in 2021, I believe, with and that was, you know, the go-go days of the internet boom. At some point, a lot of stocks did incredibly well in 2021. Topicus took off, then a stock did nothing for a couple of years. Now it's recovering, but Ernest, we think the opportunity for Topicus is just getting started. So let's get into it. We're going to talk about Topicus.
One of the things that has been core to our investment thesis in Constellation Software is that they will continue to find creative ways to deploy capital. And I think this is important because as Constellation becomes bigger, it becomes exponentially harder for them to continue to make acquisitions at the pace and compound at the pace that they are doing.
Hmm. Is that just the law of large numbers start to kick in?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because your universe of Constellation's universe of acquisitions gets smaller. Mm-hmm. They have to make more acquisitions just to maintain the pace of growth, right?
Yeah. So Constellation, I think, has a $70 billion Canadian market capitalization.
Yes.
Maybe even more. And if it's acquiring these little companies that have $2 to $5 million of revenue, that's not going to move the needle whatsoever.
Yes. And this has been the quote unquote bear case on Constellation Software over the years, is that they are starting to run against the ceiling of their acquisition runway.
That said, the last few years, it's made the most dollar value acquisitions it's ever had. So it's clearly at the moment having no trouble making acquisitions, but that could be a problem in the future.
And that's one thing that we've disagreed with the market on, mm-hmm. is that we think that Constellation will continue to find creative ways to deploy capital. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that they've done this is by merging their operating groups with software companies that they like. Mm-hmm. So they've done this twice now. Topicus was the first one, where they merged TSS, which was a division inside Constellation Software, with Topicus.com, which is a Dutch software company.
So TSS was a vertical inside Constellation Software, yes. Focused on making acquisitions in Europe.
That's right.
And decided to merge with a big acquisition of Topicus and spin that out as a separate company.
Yes, and there's a few advantages of doing this. The first and most obvious one is that they can use the equity of their operating group as a currency to mm-hmm. make acquisitions that they might not have been able to do otherwise, right? So in this case, Topicus.com shareholders are getting TSS equity.
So let's say, Ernest, someone comes and wants to acquire Baskin. They can pay me cash or they can pay me in shares. Sometimes you want the shares, especially if you want to defer your taxes, right? You can roll over shares of Baskin to the new company, tax-free, hopefully, if it's structured properly. Also, Ernest, you may want to participate in the upside growth of the newly merged company instead of taking the cash and going lie on a beach somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so Constellation did this with topicus.com. And they've done it again last year with a company called Wide Orbit.
Okay.
Where they merged another operating group called Lumine, with Wide Orbit, and you can created another public company. I think another advantage of doing this is that it creates a dedicated vertical that employees can get compensated in. Because as a reminder, at Constellation Software and all of the operating groups, employees have to put their bonus into the stock. They have to buy it on the public markets. And so as Constellation has gotten bigger over time, the link between your own individual performance and the performance of the stock has become somewhat muddled.
Yeah.
By having an independent company, so in the case of Topicus, focused on Europe, employees of Topicus and TSS are now buying shares of something that they're directly working on. And so there is some incentives alignment.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. The work that you are doing, you will be directly benefit from if the stock does well. That sounds like a great idea. So this is the change in incentives that Mark Leonard came up with as the company's gone too big.
And then lastly is that by having different independent public companies, it provides a bit of a testing ground for Constellation to see what might work, right? Historically, they've had a very kind of rigid incentive system about how they incentivize employees and how they use debt inside the business, for example, right? So having these separate companies tinker with things a little bit is an experiment. It's an experiment that Constellation can see and hopefully learn from.
Well, so far these experiments are doing quite well, right? Topicus has a market capitalization in Canadian dollars, Ernest, of I think about $15 billion, and Lumen, the spinoff, was done at $16 or $17, and the stock has doubled. So clearly somebody likes something going on with the Constellation spinoffs.
Yep. So for Topicus, as you pointed out, their strategy focuses on Europe. And they only do acquisitions in Europe. I think they've started going in Brazil, but largely Europe.
Yeah.
And Europe is an interesting place for vertical market software for a few reasons. Number one is that, unlike the US, Europe is not a country.
Yeah.
Right? It's like 50 countries.
Yeah.
Germany is not Norway, it's not Netherlands, it's not Belgium, right? They have their own language, they have their own culture. And so if you're making software in Amsterdam for the Dutch government, for example, you can't just take that software and sell it to the Germans.
Makes
sense.
Because
it's a totally different place.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why vertical market software is very sticky and it's very non-scalable in Europe.
And for those that have no idea what we're talking about when it comes to vertical market software, Ernest, just a quick explainer of that versus like a Microsoft Excel.
Sure. So vertical market software is software that is designed for a specific purpose, a specific vertical, right? So a good example of that would be, Topicus just acquired a company that provides library management in Spain, right? So the software manages libraries, right?
There you go. So, and then that,
you cannot take this software and use it for other purposes because it's specifically designed to manage libraries.
Yeah. And what's a horizontal software?
So like, by comparison, horizontal market software would be something like Microsoft Word, right? Whether you can take Microsoft Word and use it in any end market you want, it's the same software.
Exactly.
Right. And so the reason why vertical market software is a good business is because it's very hard to switch from. Mm-hmm. Once you deploy it, it's very integrated into how you operate that library. Or in more complex cases, like how you operate a transit system, for example.
It's very hard to switch any software, especially when your employees are not incentivized or motivated by switching. If we were looking, Ernest, to find a new portfolio management software, we'd have to do a request for a proposal. That takes time. We'd have to interview software firms. We'd have to test it. We'd have to negotiate prices. Everybody here at Baskin would have to learn how to use it. We already like what we use. There would be errors and problems and hair ripped out and screaming matches. So pretty much once you've settled on a niche software, you're probably using it for a very, very long time unless they do something really nasty to you.
Yeah, I think a second thing that is attractive about the vertical market software industry in Europe is that the venture capital market is a little bit less developed than what it is in the United States.
Okay.
And founders in Europe, like to broadly generalize, they care a little bit more about the legacy and the employees that work within the firm and the culture that they've created, mm-hmm. as opposed to just maximizing every dollar from selling the business. So I think if you put those things together, it's a very attractive place for Topicus to pursue its acquisition strategy. They have the people on the ground to go out and establish relationships with these companies. They're a permanent home for these software companies, and they know how to manage them. Mm-hmm. So today, I think by my count, they have 173 companies within the Topicus portfolio, and they continue to grow their geographic footprint.
Yeah, you said 173 companies and 25 different verticals in 27 countries. Everybody always talks, Ernest, about the size of the market. How many companies could Constellation possibly acquire? No one knows that number. The only reported number was from the CFO, Jamal, at Constellation, where he said in 2015, there's probably 40,000 companies. I went to a presentation by Jamal a few years ago where he said that number is a lot more today. I assume Topicus has a runway of opportunity of many thousands of companies that it could acquire. And of course, there's always new software being created and new companies founded every day.
And one of the interesting things about Topicus is that at the existing Topicus, the old Topicus, the one that was acquired by TSS.
Got it.
They have a very interesting culture in terms of incubating and developing organic growth. So this is something that historically Constellation Software has not been very good at. Historically, the Constellation Software model is they'll buy these businesses, they'll raise prices, they'll fire the employees maybe.
They're not software engineers. They maybe have some tricks and tips to help you run your business better, or outsourcing some of your employees overseas. You know, those kind of things, but they're not going to help. They're not going to improve your software.
Right.
Yeah.
So Topicus has efforts and tried to develop a culture to create organic growth. So create new software products that exists, right? And that's something that you see in Topicus's reported organic growth numbers.
Yeah.
It's a much faster organic growth business than Constellation Software, but also hopefully something that they can teach the rest of Constellation Software.
So would you say that because Topicus's organic growth is so much superior to Constellation, would you say it's because of some innovation that Topicus has or the types of companies they acquire? Why? What is the difference between the organic growth between the two companies?
Well, I think it's both.
Yeah.
I think some of it is just inherently the types of companies that they're acquiring.
Maybe paying up a little bit more than Constellation would for a faster growing business.
Yeah, some of their verticals are faster growing than Constellation overall. But then I think also like their initiatives to incubate new initiatives in the business are probably contributing as well.
So Constellation Software is famously known for never issuing more shares since it went public. Is Topicus taking that approach as well? Is it keeping its share count under control, or?
Yes, it's a little bit messy in terms of the way that the spinoff from Constellation was executed, because there's various different share classes. There's preferred shares. It's convert if they reach a certain price.
Yeah.
It's kind of messy.
So there's incentives that were given to old Topicus management and owners that are still embedded in the combined security right now.
And more, I think it's important to note that Constellation still has majority ownership and control of the business.
How much do they own? Do you recall?
I don't have the exact
figure. We'll have to put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they do control Topicus still. But Sorry, what were we talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. So Topicus decided to list its stock on the Toronto Venture Exchange.
Yes.
So essentially a company that gets most of its revenues from Europe. Not listed on the European exchange, is it?
No, not yet.
No, not yet. So why, and the new spinoff, Lumen, also on the Venture Exchange. Why did Constellation decide to do that? What is the reason? I guess you've mentioned a number of times experiments, but why are they experimenting listing those stocks on the Venture Capital Exchange instead of the regular TSX?
I think one of the things that Constellation has kind of repeatedly proved over the years is that they don't really care how you look at their company.
Yeah.
Like there's a, like, that's why they're not doing a US listing, right? I think if anything, Mark Leonard probably wants the stock price to go down.
He said that many times. Yeah.
So I think they chose the TSX Venture because it is the most accommodative exchange in terms of the rules that they have to follow. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you like the company, you're going to buy it regardless of whether it's trading on the TSX, whether it's on London, if it's in New York. Right. And so I think the TSX Venture is perfectly fine.
Got it.
I think certainly there are investors in the US that would love to be able to buy some of the Constellation subsidiaries or itself on the New York Stock Exchange, but I don't think that's going to be happening.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a mutual fund or you have it in your investment policy statement that you're only going to buy stocks listed on the US exchange, then sorry, you can't buy Constellation and you definitely won't buy Topicus. And as you said, the company doesn't care about those things. It cares about its employees. It cares about its shareholders that it currently has, and that's what it's going to focus on. So Topicus valuation, Ernest, obviously it's growing faster than Constellation. The story, it did go public when things were quite exciting for the market. So obviously that's cooled off for whatever reason. But does it deserve to trade at a higher valuation than Constellation?
I think so. I think it's one thing to note is that Topicus reports itself in euros. So if you are simply looking at the financial statements, you have to convert the euros to Canadian dollars, in order to calculate the ratios properly. But I don't think Topicus trades at a demanding valuation at all.
Okay,
it trades at about 25 times cash flow. You can't really look at the PE ratio for Topicus because a lot of their acquisitions come with these accounting adjustments that impact the reported earnings but don't impact cash flow, right? So I think, but more importantly, is that if you think that Topicus can continue to reinvest all of its cash flows at 30-40%,
it's not paying returns, a dividend, right? Constellation does pay a dividend. Constellation used to also pay special dividends, but Topicus and new spinoff Lumen, they're not going to pay dividends. Never is a long time, but the focus is on reinvesting 100% of the free cash flows.
Yeah, I think they probably can reinvest their cash flows at 30% returns on invested capital, and so even over a not very long period of time, over 3-4 years, earnings are going to be. You can do the math.
Yeah.
Earnings are going to be are going to grow into any valuation pretty comfortably.
Yeah. Well, we'll let our listeners figure out the math on that. So Topicus, Ernest, organic growth, you're getting high reinvestment of free cash flows. But more importantly, going back to our initial discussion about long-term mindset, this is not a company for you if you're looking for beat and raise, or if you're looking for predictable earnings, because Topicus is growth by acquisition. And acquisitions are going to come when they come, right? And so you could wake up tomorrow and they can make a large acquisition, or it could go a 6-month stretch of doing nothing because there's nothing to buy and no one's selling or they're working on closing deals.
And they don't even do guidance or earnings calls.
No. No one knows. No, there's who's the founder? His name is Robin.
Yes.
No, does anybody even met him or know who he is? He's
anecdotally, it seems like some people have been able to get meetings with him.
Okay.
But I haven't been able to yet.
No. So he's we don't know if he has a glorious beard like Mark Leonard. So any further notes on Topicus? Anything you want to add that we missed?
I think beyond Topicus is that it's almost certain that Constellation is going to do more of these over the next few years.
Yeah.
And so I think the first two have done pretty well, and we look forward to what's coming up.
So they spun out Topicus, which is an acquirer of software companies in Europe. They spun out Lumen, which is an acquirer of media and communication companies.
Software companies, in
North America. Constellation has more of these verticals, right? They have one focus on transportation, yes. On legal. I mean, you name the industry, they have the vertical that acquires software in those niches.
Yes, and there's literally no end to the number of verticals that they're participating in. And so there's going to be more spin-offs. Story's going to get more complex over the years.
Yeah.
But we're happy to continue owning them.
So they'll have to rename the Venture Exchange to the Constellation Spinoff Exchange. Ernest, great conversation. That's all the time we have for you today. We'll see you back here real soon.
This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.